Actions Group with Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Kendra, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kendra.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Right. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use the room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the principal foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of these meetings to carry the clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step four, part one. Please welcome our panel for this evening. Dan and Jason. I'll read the first paragraph on page 63, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each reading. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had blocked us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to the causes and conditions.
Hey, my name's Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dan.
I guess we'll just get started with some. So my sobriety date is May 1st, 2016. I do have a home group. It's 49th Street Living Sober. It meets on Thursdays at 5:30 at the Ignite Norfolk building, across from ODU on 49th Street. I do have a sponsor, and we have gone through the steps, as it says to in this book. And, you know, that's I think that's all, you know. I think that's what's usually discussed at the beginning, so that's all I'm going to do. So, I like this. Right after step three, it says launched out on a course of vigorous action. It doesn't say, you know, wait around, you know, it doesn't really say like, oh, you know, sit around for a while and then get going on the vigorous action. It says next we launched out, you know, it doesn't have any, there's no like break time in there, which is good because I don't, you know, when I came in here this last time, I didn't need any break time. I needed to just, you know, get this done and, you know, and just push through it. And, so it's good that it kind of encourages us to do that, or encourages me to do that, you know. And it's all about it. You know, I love how much the book talks about action. And, you know, I didn't get that when I first came in here. You know, I didn't get that I was an alcoholic either. You know, I didn't think any of this applied to me anyway, so I wasn't going to listen. And, you know, Yeah, I didn't do a lot of action when I first got in here. I did a lot of thinking. I did a lot of thinking about, well, am I an alcoholic or not? You know, do I need to do this or not? And, you know, I spent a lot of time thinking about that stuff and, you know, thinking about a lot of other things as well, like how people had screwed me over and a lot of stuff like that. You know, that kind of, and, you know, we'll talk about that some too and how we deal with that. But, you know, it's, you know, I thought about, you know, doing a lot of stuff, but I didn't really do much. You know, I would come in and out of here, you know, and it would get a little worse. And then I'd do a little bit. I'd get a sponsor or whatever. And, you know, I'd do a little bit with them. And then we'd get to step three and I'd be like, well, I'm not turning my will and my life over. And I'd be like, all right, you know, just hit the brakes on that. But, you know, this last time it got bad enough. And I was just like, you know, I didn't have any more reservations about it. And I was just like, I just have to do, you know. I was just desperate, you know, I got to that point that, you know, we all get to, you know, to be willing to do this. And, you know, so then I did go through the first three steps and, you know, that's the furthest I got. I'd never gotten past, you know, I think probably step two in the book during my 2 years in and out of here. And so this is a totally new thing for me this time to do step four, do an inventory. And I had heard people talk about that a lot, but I'd never really, you know, I didn't really understand what that was, and, you know, but that's what, you know, that's why it's so important that I have a sponsor, because he does know, and he's been through this, and, you know, he can help me and say, well, this is what you need to do. And, you know, the other part I didn't get was that my liquor was but a symptom. That really confused me very much, because I thought the drinking was the problem. I thought my drinking, well, you know, if I could just stop this drinking or get it. Now, I didn't want to stop drinking because I love the effect drinking, you know, alcohol had on me, but I had to control it, you know. I had to get some control over it because it was really messing up my life and I just couldn't seem to do it. And, you know, it was this really weird thing happened. Every time I would come in here and, you know, get physically sober or whatever, you know, I would get way worse. And I would just feel awful, and, you know, my family couldn't stand to be around me, and, you know, I didn't understand why that was, and, you know, it was because my liquor was but a symptom. You know, that's what I was using to treat my alcoholism, which, you know, isn't just, you know, a drinking problem. I mean, that's what I'm using to deal with, you know, to not have to think about my life or, you know, not have to, you know, handle my emotions in a, you know, like other people do, because I don't know how to do that. So I had to get down to, like it says in here, causes and conditions. What is, you know, what is the root of all this stuff, you know, that stuff that's going on in my head that's, you know, all this resentment and all this, you know, this fear and this anger, you know, what's it, you know, I had to figure out what that was all about before, you know, I could move ahead with the rest of the steps. So that's all I got.
Thank you, Dan. Hey, everybody, my name is Jason. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jason.
My sobriety date is August 4th of 2013, which brought to an end a run of about 30 years of drinking and using drugs pretty much every day. And in the beginning, it was fun. I was in high school. We were partying. Seemed like good things were happening mostly. And in the middle, it was fun, but I started getting in trouble. So it was fun with problems. And then in the end, it was just problems. And when I reached that point and I wanted to stop drinking, I found out that I couldn't. And so I spent 8 years from the time I picked up my first white chip, or I went to my first AA meeting, before I began the sobriety journey that I'm on right now. And when I look back at that, I don't want to tell people how to spend 8 years floundering in AA, but I do like to share, you know, what I think I didn't do or what I did wrong, what got me stuck for so long. And when this section talks about the liquor being but a symptom, I think I was trying to solve the wrong problem. So the problem I was trying to solve was I was in trouble, I didn't feel good, people were upset with me, I was going to lose my job, I was going to lose my marriage, I was going to lose my kids, I was going to lose my career. And so I came in to solve those problems, and I thought it was because I was drinking. And generally what happens to me, if I come in and sit somewhere in the middle of this room and listen a little bit and flip through the book with you all, my life gets better, because drinking does cause a lot of problems. I mean, I continue to create new problems every day when I'm drinking. But when I stop drinking and I dabble a bit in AA, things get better. The pressure goes down. I get out of trouble. And eventually, since I think drinking's the problem and getting out of trouble is what I'm trying to accomplish, I start to drift out. And sometimes it's a month or 3 months or 6 months or even a year. But over and over and over again, I come in here beat up. You guys help me start to get a grip on my life. Then I think I got it figured out because now I'm not drinking. And that's what I thought the problem was. But it wasn't the problem. And it wasn't until I had been beaten into such a state of desperation that I was willing to ask for help and to really listen to what was going on here, that I found out that my problem was that I felt a need to drink and take drugs to calm my mind, to put some kind of anesthetic, to put something that would numb my brain, because my natural state for my entire life has been one of anxiety. And so I'm afraid that you won't like me. I'm afraid you might like me too much. I'm afraid I won't get what I want. I'm afraid if I have something I want, I'm going to lose it. I can worry about just about anything, every possible scenario, most of which never happen or are not even possible. But that state of anxiety is my problem. And so the solution is to understand, why am I so fearful and what can I do about it besides drinking and taking drugs? And once I realize that, at least I have a chance to apply these tools in a way that'll change my life. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, the next reading is on page 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking commercial inventory is a fact-finding, fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same things with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
Okay. Yeah, this is... I think it's a pretty good analogy. Businesses that don't take inventory go broke. That's pretty. I think everyone can accept that. And then it's talking about, So I guess the parallel would be, if I don't take this inventory, and I'm the business or whatever, then I'm gonna go drink. And I don't want it, at this point when I'm going through, I don't want to go drink. So, I better take this inventory and figure out what's going on and, figure out what's, I guess the inventory is going on. It's going on paper, but it's also, what's in my head. And, it says we took stock honestly, because if I'm not being honest about what I'm writing down or, this, then what's the point, That if I'm not being honest, then then that's just going to eventually lead me back down the path to taking that first drink. And so I have to be honest with all of this, when I'm doing this fourth step. But when I'm talking to my sponsor about any of this stuff, I can't hold things back. I could have, but I knew that I couldn't, because then that would just keep going around in my head, and I'd be that would get worse and worse. So I had to get it all down there and not have any hang-ups about it. And it's saying self is what had defeated us. And I think it happened the way it's supposed to, because if I had gotten to this point before, in the 2 years before I actually was ready to really work this, I would have been like, well, self's not what, I'm a self-made man, I'm doing life, I'm doing very well. I was not doing very well, but I would I would tell people how well I was doing regardless of that. And and I didn't think self was what it was. Everyone else that was defeating me, everyone else was out to get me. My parents, my family, my friends, except for the few, there were a few friends where I'm like, no, they're cool, they're good, I like to drink with them, they're great. But all the other ones were trying to stab me in the back or whatever. And it took me a while, it took me a while to see, and this really helped, taking this fourth step really helped to see that, it is, 99% of the time, probably even more than that, it's probably more like 99.5, or so, I don't know, I'm not good at percentages, but the vast majority of the time, it's me. I have something to do with it. I'm being selfish, I'm being self-centered, you know, I'm scared of something happening, you know, I'm angry about something, and, you know, I'm reacting or whatever, and, you know, I'm you know, all these situations, and, you know, I never took responsibility for anything. I didn't take responsibility for my drink. You know, I was like, you know, I would just blame my dad. I'd be like, well, my dad's a, you know, he passed this on to me, you know, what a loser, you know, I can't stand, you know, that's terrible. Why would he, you know, I didn't think about, well, my dad's been sober for a very long time and never seen him take a drink. He's been, you know, working this program for, you know, maybe I could see, you know, ask him, hey, what do you do? You know, what do you do to stay? But I just didn't, you know, because I didn't want to stop drinking at that point. It was still, you know, doing more for me than it was doing to me. And, you know, eventually that changed and I was like, you know, I had to do something about it. But, you know, it's, I just couldn't take responsibility for everything. It was good that it's telling me in here, you know, I have to, you know, it's me. And I've got to consider what's going on and, you know, figure out, you know, what am I doing instead of, you know, just always passing it off, passing the blame off to someone else, which was what I would, you know, I did countless times. So. That's it.
It's always, it makes me chuckle when we talk about inventory. I've been working in retail for about 15 years now, and I spend most of my day focused on inventory and productive inventory or unproductive inventory, and we take inventories of stores. And so I knew what Bill meant from a business perspective, the metaphor of trying to figure out what's in the store that's good and what's in the store that's not good. But it took a long time before I could really understand or implement what that meant personally. So as a business concept, that's great. I don't want the bad stuff, I want the good stuff. And I'm seeing the company I work for, we take inventories of stores every day. And I've been through this for many years. And I know that people are afraid before an inventory. They're afraid, maybe I lost some of the merchandise. Maybe the merchandise is not good. The result's not going to reflect well on me or the conditions here. But then after the inventory is usually the best business period for the store because it's in the best shape. You figured out it's only got the good stuff. All the bad stuff is gone. It gets more good stuff. So this is really clear to me from a business perspective. I'm seeing it over and over again, but it's a completely foreign concept to me in my personal life. And I think I needed a pencil and a paper and the fact-facing that we're talking about here to get myself to focus with some honesty and some self-awareness of what was going on inside of me. And I think that the concepts of honesty and self-awareness that this introduces were pretty much foreign concepts to me for my entire life. And I struggled. At first, I would have told you I was a very honest person. And I think what I mean by that is I don't consciously lie a lot. And I'm not even sure that's a good thing. I'm not sure I really have a need to. The situation arises that it would make sense for me to lie, or I'm afraid to get caught. But that's not really my mode, but there's another sense of dishonesty, which I think is not saying the truth, not recognizing the truth, and whether that's a denial or a silence or a passive-aggressive approach to life. And I found that there had been really no honesty in my life at all until I got to the inventory stage, and not from lots of stated falsehoods, but from not really talking about the truth and acknowledging the truth. And I think that I was afraid. I'm a kind of person, we talk about pleasers a lot, people talk about them in AA, not wanting to upset other people, because my basic fear is that you all are not going to like me, people are going to reject me, I'm not going to be loved. So I don't want to say anything that might upset you. And sometimes people call me a diplomatic person, and I always thought that was great. Most of my life, I was diplomatic. I can get along with people. I don't upset people when we talk. But a lot of times that's because I'm not being honest. I'm not even really capable of recognizing and articulating how I really feel. And so I go along with other people and I do things that I don't really want to do, or I'm afraid to say what's going on. And when I get to this point in the inventory, so my life is pretty much destroyed. So I'm desperate for a solution. I know I need to deal with the feelings that have been, you know, blocking me from the feelings that I feel a need to drink all the time to numb. And so putting it down on paper is pushing me to a level of honesty and then talking to somebody else where I really have to acknowledge what's going on and the process of laying it out in some detail. And then the other piece of this for me in the inventory is the awareness. Self-awareness is also a new concept for me. After, you know, helping other people be aware of their flaws is something I've always been good at. But being aware of my own flaws, part of it is that I was just intoxicated for decades. I was never really functioning that well. And I don't think I was dry long enough for my brain to really recover. But most of the time, anytime I felt something that I could be honest about acknowledging, I numbed it out. And so lack of honesty, lack of self-awareness. And so this is going to give me a chance to start to pull those threads apart. It's not something initially I was looking forward to. I can see now that this is part of what saved my life. This is part of what enabled me to find some peace so I don't feel a need to drink and take drugs. But the idea that at the bottom of that pit or that knot is going to be selfishness and self is also something I believe that I was, you know, a charitable person. I would, you know, I would contribute to a charity, for example. Or if some friend said I need some help, I would want to help them. And I thought that made me selfless. But those are actually relatively easy ways to be selfless or not of self. In reality, I think about myself almost all the time. And it's tied up in expectations for what I want to have happen, fear of what I don't want to have happen, expectations for what you should or should not do. And all of that obsession with self then leads me to a lot of distorted interactions with other human beings. I need things from you. I'm unhappy with you. I can't relate to you in a sincere way. All of this is creating just a giant garbage pile inside of me that makes it impossible for me to have a sense of peace. And I chuckle when Dan's talking about you put a number on the selfishness, you know, 90%. Or even now in sobriety, when I try to review my day and where was I selfish and how did I think of others and how I could help them, I've never given myself better than like an 80% selfish is the best I can do. If I can make a little bit of a wedge so that I'm thinking about other people some of the time, that's actually a good day. If I get a day when I'm thinking about other people, you know, nearly 3/4 of the time, that's a good day, because I got a lot of days when I'm thinking to myself all the time, and those are always bad days. And so being honest and aware of what's going on is going to be the key to getting out of this pit.
The next reading is on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, situations, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that our self-esteem, our pocketbook, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
Yeah, resentment definitely is the number one offender for me. And, you know, it was well on its way to, you know, or, you know, my resentments were well on my way to, like, kind of taking over and really running my life into the ground, because that was, you know, I would say the two most common things that my mind would be occupied with on any given day when I was in the middle of my alcoholism, you know, it was either when can I drink again? How can I get my alcohol? You know, where am I going to be able to? How can I get away with it this time? How can I manage it this time? Or it was, you know, who am I resentful at today? You know, who screwed me over today? Who did this? Who, you know, did my resentful, you know, usually a lot of time it was my parents, maybe my brothers, probably some of my friends also, you know. And, you know, honestly, when I was coming in and out here, I was resentful of people in AA, you know, for, you know, because they would say something I didn't like, or they would share something, you know, and I would get a resentment about it. And I'd be like, well, because I thought it was all a personal attack on me. I take things very personally when I hear it, and I'm like, you know, oh, they must be taught, you know, when really they're, you know, people in here are just trying to, you know, I understand this now, are just sharing and try and help the newcomer, but I, you know, I was so, like, my mind was so warped that I was just like, it was all about me, and it was like, oh, there must be, you know, they're singling me out or whatever. And, you know, it's just crazy, but that's the way I, you know, that's the way my mind operated. And so, you know, it's, and I didn't really get the part about the spiritual, like, people started talking about the spiritual, like, I have a spiritual mat, you know, when I was still, like, kind of trying to figure this thing out, I was like, well, what is that, you know? Like, no, I, you know, I go to church, and, you know, I do good, you know, I help people out or whatever. You know, I'm not spiritually sick. You know, maybe this doctor's opinion is talking about something that my drinking might not be normal. That's a, you know, that might be okay, because then I can kind of have a little excuse here to kind of say, oh, no, no, I have this alcoholism, and, you know, I can't control it once I start. So, you know, maybe that can give me away. But I didn't like, you know, I was like, well, no, nothing's wrong with my mind. You know, my mind's fine. You know, that's okay. You know. But, and, you know, certainly not spiritual. I didn't even understand what a spiritual, you know, malady was, because I never got very far in the book, you know, to figure it out with the sponsor. And, you know, and then it's saying, you know, when the spiritual part, then the mental and physical follow. And I was like, no, nah, that doesn't make, you know, that doesn't make any sense. You know, I was like, well, why isn't it the opposite? You know, like that's just proves that I can't just go through this and read this whole thing by myself. Like, I have to have someone, you know, who's been through this program to explain stuff to me, or I'll just get all kinds of crazy ideas. I remember one time I had bought this, someone at a meeting suggested I buy a big book. He's like, hey man, you buy this big book and like, go and read it or whatever. And I was like, okay. And I was just like, I was pretty crazy, you know, and I was trying to read it, and I was like flipping to these pages. I think I was trying to read some of the stories or something, and I was just like, what is going on? What are they talking about? What is, I don't understand any of this. How is this going to help me stop drinking? There's nothing in here about, you know, this is what you can do to control it or whatever. I was like, oh, this, I don't understand, like, this is not helpful. And this, I just gave up on it, because that's what I did my whole life, you know. I was like, just gave up on stuff when it got too hard. And, you know, this seemed really hard, and, you know, but eventually I came back to it when there weren't, you know, really any other options left on the table. It was either this or, you know, going on down the road toward the alcoholic death, or, you know, ended up in jail or wherever I was going to end up, which is not going to be anywhere good. And, you know, and this part actually wasn't too bad for me, because I was real easy for me to list all my resentments and all the people that, you know, I was upset at. And, you know, that's really the easy part. You know, the hard part is where it's talking about, well, not even why we're, you know, that was a little more difficult for me to figure out, because I didn't understand how a lot of this stuff affected me. Like, one of my big resentments was that, you know, actually still is a little, you know, it hasn't totally gone away, but it's, you know, it's not as bad as it used to be. But, you know, it's my uncle and my aunt adopted my two cousins. You know, they adopted these, and they became my cousins from Latvia. And, you know, and I, you know, I kind of was growing up with them, and they were my cousins, and, you know, it was great, and we hung out, and they, you know, it was cool. And then all of a sudden, one day, like, one of my, you know, and this is my older, he was a little older than me, and he was kind of like my, sort of my big brother, because I'm the oldest sibling in my family, so I kind of considered him my, sort of my big brother, because my other cousin was older too, but I didn't like him, so I, you know, I liked this cousin. And so then one day, you know, I got the news that he had got shipped off to, like, foster care. And the only explanation I ever got was that he got in a fight with his brother, my other cousin. And I was like, what, you know? And so I just, you know, since that point, and this uncle's also my godfather, so it's kind of like, you know, makes it even worse, because I'm like, man, this guy, he really picked a great guy to be my godfather, huh? But, you know, you know, so then I got a resentment at my parents for that too. You know, I can get all kinds of stuff going on with the resentments, and, you know, they spin off of each other too. But, you know, it's really pretty you know, incredible, not in a good way though. But so that was a big one. Like, that was a really serious, and, you know, I would get really worked up about that, and I would start yelling at my mom about it, and, you know, why, you know, I don't understand. And, you know, I didn't see where, like, what that was, that a, you know, that I don't have much to do with. That's all my uncle. You know, this is all his fault. Like, how can it be? But it was still affecting my security and my family, and that security of having that, you know, that older brother kind of figure in my life. That's what it was affecting. And, you know, my I think that's really what was getting down to. And really, it was at the root of it was just this fear, like, and this uncertainty about, like, I didn't know what had happened to, you know. I still saw him after that, but it, you know, wasn't the same, and it seemed like my family just kind of, you know, the rest of my family just kind of shunned it and, like, wouldn't talk about him, and it just really upset me. But, you know, I was able to kind of, you know, talking about my sponsor with it, we were able to get to some kind of, you know, point to where I was like, well, you know, I was able to say, maybe I don't know everything, which that's a big step for me to say I don't know everything, because I, you know, a lot of times I think I do, but, you know, I was able to say, you know, maybe there's more to this that they didn't share, you know, maybe there's something else that, you know, I wasn't, because I was younger, that, you know, maybe I can talk about, you know, and try to get some resolution instead of just, you know, having this all going on in my head and not doing anything about it and having it push me towards a drink. So, you know, that was, that was a big one, but, you know, there were a lot of others, but that was definitely one where it was important, you know, and this goes along with the fifth step too, just like getting this list and then, you know, discussing it. Because if I just take this list and just like, you know, okay, now what do I do? You know, I have to, you know, say all this stuff out loud and get it out there and see what, get to the bottom of it, basically. So,
so in this paragraph, what I see is the instructions for doing the inventory, what would some people would call the dreaded inventory. People don't want to do the inventory. Sometimes people bail out of the steps and out of AA before doing the inventory. Or I think, for me, this is what sets me free. This inventory, this is a set of instructions to help me deal with resentments. And you see people all the time, and myself sometimes, and people in and out of the rooms, who are carrying around grudges about things that happened in the past that's still eating at them like it happened today. Mm. And I'm not a person who carries around the dictionary and looks up a lot of words in the big book, but I did hear, I think it was Joe and Charlie, talk about resentment and talk about it as re-feeling. And for me, that's one of the hallmarks here, is the things that I am feeling over and over again, often long after they happened. Clearly, it's after they happened, whether it's something that happened yesterday or something that happened 20 years ago. I'm carrying this around, and it's eating me alive, and it's a heavy weight to carry. And I don't know how to get rid of it. But the instructions are actually sitting right here in front of us. And so, you know, who am I upset with? Why am I upset? And what does it affect in me? And we talk about how long it takes to do an inventory. I don't really think it needs to take a long time. I think you could sit down and knock a bunch of this out with the right motivation and the right frame of mind within a couple of hours and make some real progress, because this begins to take some of the poison out of the resentment. So for me, I can list the people I'm mad at. Like Dan said, it's just about everybody I know, everybody I interact with, everybody in authority, certainly, anybody I expect something from or whose opinion really matters to me. But I can actually put it down on a piece of paper. And so my parents are on the list. My boss is on the list. My wife or my ex-wife or a girlfriend is on the list. And it's easy for me to rip off the list of people that I'm upset with, because I'm probably on the bar stool complaining about them. And so, and you all have heard me, whoever my friends are, I'm complaining about them all the time. But I think that when Dan said it's a little harder to say what I'm upset about, now I can gripe about it, but to really get a grip on what it is about this person's behavior that affects me is when I begin to see where it's actually eating me up, and then I can get to my part and I can start to take some of the poison out of this thing. So I need to spend more time on that, but it's still not that hard, because these things have been rattling around in my head for a long time. And sometimes it's pretty silly, but it's still worth putting down on a piece of paper for me. So if I'm talking about my girlfriend, there's a pretty good chance it's either she doesn't like me enough, she doesn't show enough affection for me, and it may be that she didn't call me back or didn't answer my text quickly, or maybe someone didn't want to go out with me, actually didn't like me, but some form of girlfriend doesn't like me enough. And then sometimes it's girlfriend likes me too much. I like it when those two come right in a row. And sometimes it's the same person, and sometimes it could be within the same day or week. But I can get a better sense of what that is. So either they like me so much they want something from me, or that I mean something to them, I need to live up to that expectation, or maybe this is getting serious. So some form of girlfriend doesn't like me enough, likes me too much is always on my inventory. But being able to get down to that rather than complaining about a particular lady, it gets me a lot closer to the solution. And that's the easy one. It's easy to chuckle with. And my boss is always on the list, so it's easy. I'm mad at my boss. I'm always irritated with my boss. And You know, this morning it started with, every Monday morning it starts with, he asked me, how was my weekend? And that's it. I'm like, really? And he asked me how my weekend was. And it may not be obvious why that upsets me, but I need to write that down. I need to get to the bottom of that, because that's not a helpful level. But he asked me how my weekend was, and then he doesn't listen at all, and he doesn't really care, and then he moves on to something else. And really what I want is him not to ask me at all how my weekend was. But really, when I get down to the bottom of it, I'm upset with my boss. Either he doesn't decorate me enough or reward me enough or acknowledge my work enough, or I'm afraid that he's not going to like my work and I'm going to be in jeopardy. I'm going to do something he doesn't like. Could I lose my job? And once I get to that level, I'm beyond complaining about what he said, but getting down to either I want him to like me or I'm afraid he won't like me, I'm getting to something that I can deal with, so I can start to pull these wires out. And then some of them are really deep, and then maybe that's why we struggle with the resentment. There's the inventory, there's the silly stuff or the trivial stuff we can chuckle about, but I've got my parents. You know, Dan shared a story that touches you, and my parents, I look back at my childhood and I'm upset with my dad. And sometimes I'm still upset with him, but not nearly with the energy and the anger and the pain that I used to have. When I was young, my mother passed away from drug addiction, and there was an accident in our house and she passed out. She was smoking a cigarette and she set the house on fire. And my sister and I were in the house, and we got out of the house. The firemen got us out of the house. And that really, for me, that it changed my life, obviously. I felt the anxiety at a young age, and I've always felt that anxiety. I don't think it's just because I had a traumatic childhood, but I know from that point in time, I always felt like something bad could happen at any time. Mm-hmm. But what I take it out on my dad, because I think to myself, my dad should have saved my mom. He should have done something for her. My dad's a doctor, and theoretically, he knows about these illnesses. Now, this was in the early 70s, and maybe people don't know as much. As I start to peel the thing apart, it's not quite as justified as this resentment I'm carrying around. But I need to get to the point where I can say, I'm mad at my dad because he didn't save my mom. There's a reason. There's something about this that bothers me. And then I got to get to, what's my injury? So I'm afraid he's not going to take care of me, you know? And then I'm afraid that he's not living up to my expectations, what I think a dad should be. And so once I get to that point, I have a chance to pull it apart. And even though some of our resentments feel like they're justified, there still, as we're going to get to, a lot of this that's my responsibility. I'm still re-feeling something that happened over 40 years ago. And you know, we all have things we wish didn't happen, but to carry them around for 40 years is pretty much a recipe for alcoholism, or dying of alcoholism, because it's going to continue to eat at you. And so these tools are going to help us pull the wires out on this thing. And it ranges from silly little things that we can chuckle about to some serious stuff that's happened. But whatever it is, we still have to defang this. We've got to be able to make some peace with it.
Awesome. We have a lot of reading left to do, so I'm going to just read through all this and y'all can finish out, okay? Starting page 65. We went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and when we were sore at ourselves, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Then on page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, we do squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with alcoholics, whose hope is in the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely great. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. and with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be dubious luxuries of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things were poison. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How may I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoided retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Referring again to our list, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though the situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other persons involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We committed our wrongs. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and were willing to set these matters straight.
Wow, that's a lot there. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. I did want to say one thing before I get into some of this stuff. So I talked about moving on to the fourth step immediately, and I also talked about being honest. So I just want to say that I did not do the fourth step. I just want to be clear. I did not sit down and write my list immediately after I did my third step. That didn't happen. I kind of did the same thing that, you know, I've heard that some other people do, which was kind of, so I was like, oh, no, I'm feeling a little bit, you know, okay, I don't need to, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do it this, and then I would get busy or whatever, and so then a little while, maybe a couple weeks or so went by or whatever, and then I started feeling a little, I was like, man, I don't feel it, you know, what's going on here, and then I was like, oh, you know what, I'm still on my, like, still haven't started my fourth step, so then there happened to be this fourth step workshop coming up, and my sponsor suggested that I would go to, you know, I should go to it, so I did go to it. And, you know, it was sort of helpful, but what it did do was I was like, man, I don't really like some of that. And I was like, well, then maybe I should just do it the way, you know, that we talked about, and then I could just do it my own way and not have to worry about that stuff. And so then I actually sat down and started working on it. And I didn't do it all at once, but at least it got me, you know, I got started and got rolling on it. But, and what I kind of thought of was, you know, I had heard people share, you know, over the time I had been coming to meetings, people would say, oh, yeah, the fourth step, that's the one that'll get you, you know. Like Jason had mentioned, you know, people, you know, sometimes will go back out and drink over, you know, rather than, you know, this is the one that people seem to get stuck on sometimes. And I was like, man, you know, this seems like this is getting to the point where that could be. And I was like, I don't want to risk it anymore. This is, you know, I'm doing well with the steps. So I just got to get this done. And so that was kind of, you know, and I thought back and, you know, remembered what people had said about it before and, you know, their own experiences. So that really helped me. And I was like, you know, it doesn't have to be that way, you know, because I can learn from that and, you know, not have to have my own experience with it, but just go ahead and do this and just do the best I can and be as honest as I can. So that's what I ended up doing. But I did drag my feet a little bit on that one. So anyway, let's see. Yeah, to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. That's pretty much always as far as I ever got. I never got to where I was wrong, you know, because that didn't matter, you know. If you know, whatever the other person did was obviously worse, and, you know, whatever I did was just in reaction to that, and, you know, they started it. So, you know, that was really my, you know, I was like, well, that, you know, hey, come on. I, you know, that was a normal reaction, even when a lot of times it wasn't. But, you know, the more we fought, the worse matters got, and I only seemed to win. Even when I, like, would win an argument, or I would be like, oh, yeah, I really showed them, It didn't make, you know, I don't can't remember that ever making me feel a lot better about myself or my life or anything, you know. It was just, you know, I just thought, I think sometimes I thought that would be the case, but it wasn't. And, you know, it's, if I've got this underlined in here, if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. And it's talking about, you know, these, you know, the grouch and the brainstorm, you know, those might be the dubious luxury of normal men. So what that's saying to me is I can't live my life like just a, you know, regular person that doesn't have, you know, alcoholism, because I can't, you know, I'm not that, that's not the way my mind works. You know, this resentment stuff, like some people can just let a lot of things roll off their shoulders. You know, I can't do that. I hold on to stuff. And I, you know, like this with my cousin and my uncle and all, like I've held on to that for, you know, years and years, and just like building it up in my head. And there's, you know, there's a lot of other things, you know, these breakups that I had, you know, like people have a breakup and just move on. I went out and, you know, well, first I had a, you know, bender, you know, that I went on over it, but then, you know, that continued on for a while. But then I just had this huge resentment toward this person where like I couldn't be in the same room with them. And, you know, that's not a, you know, there's lots of people that, you know, don't live their lives that way. And, you know, that's, you know, these things are poison, and they really are poison for you. Resentment is a poison, and, you know, that's, I can definitely, you know, I agree with that. And, you know, this is hard for me, this part where it's saying, you know, and I have this, my sponsor had me write down here, how to deal with resentments. With, we asked God to help us show the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. I'm still working on this, to be honest. Like, I don't do this every single time I, you know, have an interaction with someone who upsets me or I have a resentment over. But this tells me what to do. It's just a matter of, you know, do I always remember to apply this? And sometimes the answer is no. But sometimes it's, yeah, you know, sometimes I do react, you know, like, you know, the steps have taught me, but it's a process, man. I'm never going to be perfect at this, but I just do the best I can. And, you know, and I'm reading this again now, so maybe this will remind me, like, maybe tomorrow there'll be some situation, and then I can say, you know, this person's really sick, you know, how can I, you know, help them instead of, you know, escalating this situation. I don't know, maybe that's, who knows, but avoid retaliation or argument. That's hard for me to, you know, I love to argue, you know, my parents, both lawyers, and, you know, I grew up in it, and I was like, you know, I love to, you know, I'll get in an argument about anything, especially when I was drunk, you know, I would love to argue, I'd sit there and argue with people all the time, I would just make up stuff to argue about, because that's how much, you know, I just really enjoyed it, but, you know, and so it's telling me to avoid, and retaliation, I was a big fan of retaliation, I have all these plans in my head of how I was going to get back at all these people, and, you know, I never carried any of them out because I was too busy getting drunk and thinking about them, but, you know, they were all up there in my head, and, you know, it's telling me to avoid all that stuff, and I'm like, man, this is the way I've lived my life for a, you know, I don't know that since I was a kid, you know, I'm sure I had some of that stuff, but it really was once my drinking started, then that stuff started picking up too, and it was just this cycle that went on and on. But, you know, and it says, you know, it says we wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. And that's really what it's telling me it's all about for me. And this, you know, it's about being helpful to someone else. And, you know, if I'm, you know, burn that bridge with them, then maybe down the road they might, you know, whether it's, you know, are they an alcoholic or do they need help with something else? Maybe it's just something else in their life that I could, you know, be of assistance with. And if I, you know, if I have this huge blowout or argument with them or whatever, then, yeah, I might not be able to help them in the future. And I think that's a really good way for me to think about it. Cause, you know, and I can't help everyone, but, you know, I don't have to, you know, be a jerk to everyone either. I think that's what it's really telling me. And, that's really a really radical shift in, you know, my perspective and the way I've always thought about, you know, dealing with people, because it was always about what can I get out of this? What can I get from you? What can you do for me? If you can't do anything for me, you know, I don't really care. And it's saying like the opposite of that. So that's, you know, that's a big deal. And, you know, that's still ongoing for me. But, you know, yeah, that's all I got. Thanks.
So this is pretty dense. This, for me, is really the meat of recovery, learning how to use some spiritual tools to overcome the resentment so that I can have some peace and I don't feel the need to drink. I think the case for how dangerous resentment is has been made. I can tell you that at the end of my drinking, I felt like a victim. I was consumed with self-pity. I had so much resentment that I really couldn't feel any gratitude for the things that were good in my life. I did squander a lot of hours. But the most important thing for me in my experience with this is, how does it work? Does the inventory actually work to ease the resentments? And it takes some effort and some honesty to lay out who I'm mad at and why and how did it hurt me. But the final piece that kind of collapses the whole structure, this imaginary haunted house in my head, is what is my part? I have responsibility, because when I feel like a victim, I'm never going to recover. But I have responsibility. In some cases, I'm entirely responsible. So with my boss, I'm arrogant, I'm judgmental, and I have great ambition, I feel entitled. I'm bringing all these things to it that make this situation unpleasant. But when I start to see that I have a huge part in this, in this case, probably all of it. I mean, my boss has done a lot for me, and all I do is complain about him. But when I can see that it's my selfishness, my insecurity that sets this whole thing up, it really does start to lose its power. And maybe that one's easy. And so I think about the girlfriend or the ex-wife, and they didn't love me enough or they loved me too much. But I don't think I was really honest in these relationships about how I felt, about what I needed. And that makes it impossible for the other person to really participate in the relationship in a meaningful way, that kind of dishonesty. And again, I'm responsible, and suddenly this thing's not as scary. And then the big one for me was always my mom's death and my dad not doing anything about it. And I love to cling to this one because I thought this was the justified resentment. So those are the ones that are going to be toughest for us to let go of. But once I'm really honest and I'm open and I'm talking to my fellows in AA about this experience, I can see this from an entirely different angle. So I think about myself as an adult, as a parent, as an alcoholic, an active alcoholic around my children. None of you were able to tell me to stop. None of you were able to get me to stop. And my wife wasn't able to get me to stop. And my parents weren't able to get me to stop. And professionals couldn't get me to stop. But I'm judging my dad because he didn't stop another addict from active addiction. And when that starts to click, that I'm responsible, I'm bringing to this thing a whole judgmental attitude that I think I know the answer, I could have done better. And also the inconsideration, the self-centeredness of this, that I can be mad at him for something that I'm pretty sure he didn't want to have happen. This was not his plan. He was in bad shape beforehand living in this household, and afterwards he was in really bad shape trying to run this household. And I am so petty and self-centered and judgmental that I spend the next 30 years mad at him for not doing better at something that I'm sure he wanted to do better. And I know that he did the best he could, just like I'll do the best I can with the next sick and suffering alcoholic who comes up to me. But once I start to see my part in this, the whole thing starts to collapse. There is no justified resentment. There is only my attitude and my belief that it all has to do with me, and it doesn't really have to do with me. And where I'm left at the end of this is that I start to see, I come into this thinking that I'm unique. We joke sometimes in my sponsorship tree, I'm a snowflake or I'm a peacock. I'm so unique. There's something different about me. I have different problems you don't understand. But when I'm done with this process, we're all pretty much the same. We're all people who are just trying to deal with an uncertain world, wondering if people are going to like us or not like us, and complicating our relationship with each other because of it. And the closer I can get to, as it said, you know, people are sick just like we are, the easier it is for me to have a genuine connection with other people. And once I'm connected with other people and I'm honest and aware, I don't have to drink anymore. Thanks.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to do the seventh tradition basket. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions, while contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses. Seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also intergroup, central office, local services, district area, general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary only to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements? I'm sure there's announcements in the Harmony, which would be over there with the pamphlets. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining the home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. All right. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety who would like to welcome you? Just go ahead and raise your hand and give us your first name. Yes, sir.
I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Robert. Welcome.
Yes, sir.
Alex.
Welcome.
I'm Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Welcome.
Welcome.
I'm Jasmine. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jasmine.
Jasmine, welcome.
Hey, George.
George, welcome.
All right, awesome. Welcome all the newcomers. Okay, we do have literature available. It's over on the table there. If you can fold it, you can take it. If you can't fold it, you got to pay for it. just see a home group member if you need a book or something. Sponsorship. Okay, sponsorship in A is yours for the asking. We urge you to do not delay. Anyone who's willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Lots of people. If you have any questions or would like any additional information about sponsorship in A, I will be available after this meeting. Please feel free to come and talk to me if you have any questions. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt cans provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors, all meetings, audio recordings, and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Definitely going to have to listen to the nights again because it was awesome. In closing, can we please thank our panel again? Thank you all for, thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, we're invited to encourage to continue the conversation on step four discussed tonight at the meeting, after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. All right, that's like down college.
22nd and Colonial.
Colonial and 22nd, sorry about that, I'm not from here. all right, do I have a volunteer for, all right, thanks, Dave.
Thank you. Hey, David.
David.
Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, let's close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming.
back, it works when you work it.